It's true. Across the globe, women aren't as prosperous as men. Gender inequality is a pressing moral issue, but we forget it has massive economic implications. If you were to put all of the women who don't have access to formal financial services in one place, they would make up the third largest country in the world. That means an entire population without bank accounts, credit cards, or other tools you and I likely benefit from daily. Prosperity for women starts with inclusive policies, products, and people around the globe, and the investment to make it happen. Welcome to the Making Finance Work for Women podcast. My name is Sonia Kelly, and I lead Women's World Banking's proprietary research division. Join me as I speak with changemakers around the globe to deconstruct the social and economic exclusion women face. We'll discover new evidence together and drive action to accelerate women's economic empowerment. Because a leg up isn't a handout, it's a global game changer. Hi, thanks for tuning in today to the Making Finance Work for Women podcast, streaming exclusively on LinkedIn. I'm your host, Sonia Kelly. If you're listening to us now live on LinkedIn, you'll also be seeing me in the chat. So I'm hoping we can have a parallel conversation over there while I talk with our guest. Before we get started, I'd like to give a special shout out to Women's World Banking's Making Finance Work for Women sponsors. Our leading sponsor is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Our scaling sponsor is Ernst & Young. Our broadening sponsors are MetLife Foundation and the European Investment Bank. We have supporting sponsors in the Sasakawa Peace Foundation, the United Nations Capital Development Fund, and the International Finance Corporation. We're also incredibly grateful to our core funders for enabling our strategy, including Australia's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, the Swedish International Development Cooperation Agency, and Visa Foundation. Today, we're discussing the potential of mobile financial services for increasing women's economic participation, building on some of the exciting findings we heard in the recently released GSMA Mobile Gender Gap Report. We'll also be integrating some of our own observations from Women's World Banking and from our guest. And you're in for a treat with our guest, who leads on financial services for a mobile network company as their CEO. I'll introduce you to her in a minute, but first, some context. We know that the usage of mobile internet is not keeping pace with connectivity. According to GSMA, which is a mobile industry association for the whole world, although mobile operators' investments in network infrastructure have helped to shrink the coverage gap from 1.4 billion people in 2015 to 400 million people in 2022, that's a billion people who've been newly included in the last 7 years, so tremendous progress. There are still 3.2 billion people around the world who are covered by networks who are not using or reaping the benefits of this connectivity and coverage. We also know that women are disproportionately affected by this issue, with the gap around usage of mobile internet increasing in 2022 to 16%. Women versus men. This translates into 264 million fewer women than men who are using mobile internet, with implications for financial services. I have personally been able to witness the critical role that mobile plays in women entrepreneurs' business growth. We conducted some research in Indonesia last year, and Women's World Banking heard stories of hundreds of women entrepreneurs who were incorporating e-commerce into their businesses. Their phone offered a valuable way for them to seek much-needed flexibility between their responsibilities at home and their entrepreneurial goals. This is a unique benefit to women because we know women have greater unpaid care responsibilities at home and a strong commitment to their family well-being. In fact, one of the busiest times on e-commerce platforms in Indonesia is actually after the kids go to bed, which is incidentally one of my most personally productive times as a mother, so I can relate. Another example of why this is important, Women's World Banking talked during the COVID-19 global pandemic to Mexican women entrepreneurs who continued to maintain their physical locations of their businesses. But then they used social media on their phones, WhatsApp or Facebook or other platforms, to communicate, negotiate, and coordinate pickup with their customers, essentially creating an online business leveraging their physical geographic location. If these online tools had not been available to them, they wouldn't have been able to leverage their business to its fullest potential in a time of crisis. So with that intro of the importance of the topic, I'd like to welcome now our guest, Anika Santu, to join us. Hi, Anika.
Hi, Sonia. Hi, Sonia. Thank you for having me.
Anika, if I could just share why I'm excited to talk with you. Anika is the CEO of Digital Financial Services for Digicel. She's based in London, but we often find her in other parts of the world, in fact. Her track record precedes her. She actually pioneered a series of first-of-their-kind initiatives in Pakistan early in her career in Jazz Cash, Mobile Link Microfinance Bank, National Incubation Center, and Vion. And she advises organizations like the WEF, GSMA, who I mentioned before, and even Women's World Banking as a member of our board from her vantage point in the industry. So welcome, Anika. I'm so glad you're with me.
Thank you so much, Sonia. It's a pleasure to be here.
So my kickoff question here is more about your journey to this space and to this conversation. You seem to have always been at the cutting edge of digital financial services, which I think is really exciting. But tell me about how you got into this space and what has sort of brought you through that digital financial services journey.
So I happened to come into the space as a coincidence, is what I would say. I really was working in a telecom and on the marketing side. And we started a project, just to experiment with mobile money and see what we could offer our customers. And at that time, Pakistan had a very low banking penetration. So we had a 12% banking penetration, but your cellular penetration was more than 65%. And the distribution was really entrenched across the country, even in very rural areas. So it just made sense that we could leverage the strength of the telecom distribution and the brand to really offer something as financial services. And so it started as a project, but the more I worked at it, the more passionate I became about it. And it was just about the opportunity of what it would unlock, right? So when we started doing some of the project where we were doing remittances from urban to rural, and the impact that we saw on communities was phenomenal. And, you know, that really was something that, you know, drove me even deeper into the project. And, you know, that's where it started. And I've been attached to it since and really passionate. And really the impact that it has had on minorities, on the communities, demarginalized communities, and specifically women. I've seen that across the world now. It started with Pakistan, but it's been a multi-country journey for me now. And it continues to grow. And like you mentioned, you touched upon your comment on the GSMA report on the gender gap, right? That's real. And over the last 2 years, I think it's slowed down because of obviously the impact of the pandemic, the inflation, all the economic challenges that everybody is facing now, and more so in the low and middle income countries, right? So it's everything gets exaggerated and the impact is much stronger. So it's really important that everybody who's in this space really plays their role and is able to drive both financial and digital inclusion is what I would focus on.
Thanks. There were a number of things that you just mentioned that I'm looking forward to picking up on in our conversation. I'd like to put a pin in use cases and come back to that a little bit later. But first, let's set the stage. You mentioned the global gender gap in personal technology, devices, and mobile network connectivity. What specific challenges or barriers contribute to this gender gap? You specifically mentioned the pandemic. Are there other drivers that you're keeping track of from your vantage point in the markets where Digicel operates?
So I think the first one is affordability, right? So, and when we talk about the pandemic and we talk about the inflation, obviously it's impacted everybody. And so affordability is the one that really impacts, and it impacts everybody, but impacts women much more. And so devices have become more expensive. And so access is limited for people. And they have to think about whether putting food on the table or buying a device, right? And you talk about the benefits later about, you know, what you can do with the device, but that's the first barrier that they have. And then the second one that you'll see, and that's not only in Digicel or the Caribbean, but that's across the world, is that people who have smartphones are not all internet users. So they still don't use the internet. Again, it goes back to price, especially when you look at low and middle income countries, because it's the pricing and affordability index. And then the third factor that features in is literacy, digital literacy, right? So all these factors, you know, if you look at it as a funnel, you know, I would look at the affordability and then, you know, access, affordability, and then really on literacy, which drives this gender gap. And it continues to do so till there's more economic stability across the world.
What about on the supply side? We talked about some of the demand side barriers, but what about the supply side? Like for people who have a smartphone and aren't using it for mobile internet, is that at all driven by poor network connectivity in rural areas or other things? Or do you think it's primarily demand side issues?
So if you talk about connectivity, if the internet or connectivity is present in an area, then regardless of gender, you have access to it, right? There's a lot of initiatives that all mobile network operators take to drive internet usage also. So you come up with special bundles, you come up with special promos, you come up with campaigns like in Digicel, it's quite common. There's a big back to school campaign because, you know, everybody's, you know, when you're going back to school, parents are buying uniforms, parents are buying books, all of those things. So there's a big back to campaign and a back to school campaign. So there's a lot of segmentation and targeting campaigns that you do to drive mobile internet usage. Again, I think it just goes back to affordability at the end of the day and what people can spend versus what they need to do on necessities, right? So I think that's the choice people make at the end of the day.
Mm. As a researcher, I'm so curious to hear about how you at Digicel gather these insights and data on the gender gap in personal technology devices and mobile internet, but also kind of general, general reasons that might drive lower access for marginalized populations beyond women. What are some of the ways that you use to diagnose this challenge that you have to solve?
So there's a lot of work. So we have a whole research team that does research into different areas, whether it's segments. It's population-wise, it's usage-wise. So we have a research team that does it. And then we use a lot of the data that we have to see trends of how is it working. One of the trends I'll tell you that because we track it very closely, even with mobile money that we have, right, is the usage of USSD versus the app, right? So in some markets, the usage of USSD to use mobile money is much higher than usage of a mobile app. Even though your 4G penetration is like of the devices is 65%, but on USS on the mobile app, the usage would be 5 to 10% versus USSD, right? And the reason for that is size of the app. And you know, it's really interesting because, you know, the customer will choose what they want to have on their phone. So the size will really make the customer choose. So they'll choose, they'll have WhatsApp, they'll have Facebook, and they'll have one more. And beyond that, they can't download anything more because they don't have space for it. So what we are doing through that research now is that we are trying to optimize the space, size of our app to make it as small as possible so that customers can download that and use that easily. And they don't have to make it a choice of whether, you know, okay, you can access it through USSD, so you can delete the app. And that's what we don't want because the app itself is a powerful tool because it allows you a lot more insight and a lot more engagement with the customer, which is one-on-one.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And that was going to be my next question. I wonder if you can expand a little bit on, once you've diagnosed these challenges, any initiatives or programs that you implement to address this. So you talked about smaller app size. You're always thinking about new innovations to close this gap between access and use. So could you talk a little bit more about one or two more of those?
Yeah, sure. So one is the app, that the size of the app is what we are working on to make sure that it's as small as possible so that customers don't have to make a choice. The second is that within the app, there's the specific banners that you can create. And through that, you know, we believe in the base of one, so segment of one. So you're able to interact one-on-one with each customer. So with women customers, we want to target them on digital and financial literacy specifically according to their usage behavior. Then we want to create plans for them and products for them so they can use. So women entrepreneurs, right? One of the things that we found out again through research was that e-commerce is big in the Caribbean region, but one of the challenges is getting paid for it, right? So they're not able to get the payments instantly. So what we are trying to see is how do we enable those entrepreneurs to be able to accept payments? So we are working on a solution as we speak, which is the merchant solution, which is going to allow them to accept payments on their e-commerce platforms, right? So segmentation, literacy, and then specific features just developed for the women. That's what we're working on.
I'm so glad you're working on that e-commerce payment piece, because I mentioned earlier our research on e-commerce, and I was stunned that everything was happening on the mobile device, except for payments.
Yes.
So it was the communication, the negotiation, an agreement about when and where the product would be delivered. And then people were still paying in cash, which caused just massive inefficiencies in the system, frankly. Like the driver would collect the cash and then deposit it. And then it took a little while to work its way through the system to the merchant's account. I do see this as a tremendously use case with tremendous potential. I'm so glad you brought it up, and I'm so glad you're Absolutely. Working on it.
And the other thing that it also enables is that when the cash is slow to go to the entrepreneur, they have less working capital and they can't scale as fast as they would like to, right? So if they're able to get their money real time, they can reinvest that money and expand their business faster. So there's a lot of benefits. And again, you know, with my experience in emerging markets, we saw the same in Pakistan also. It was cash on delivery because, you know, that was the most convenient. You did everything online, but you only paid for the product when it was physically delivered, and that too with cash. And then you're always struggling because you're running somewhere to collect your cash, either the ATM or you don't have it. So from that perspective, you know, we are aggressively working on the merchant solution so that we're able to enable that for the entrepreneurs who are doing e-commerce, who are doing their businesses through online platforms.
Yeah, and that has larger economic implications too. There's so much unused capital that's in the system kind of waiting to be cleared, which, yeah, as you said, for entrepreneurs means they can't pay their suppliers, can't scale yes. More quickly. This is so great. This is exciting. Gosh, can you give me an update on that in a few months?
Definitely will. Definitely. Once we have it live, I will give you the update on how it's going along with usage also.
That's great. Well, now I'd like to turn to getting some editorial perspectives from you on the opportunities and risks of new technology for women's financial inclusion. So first, fundamentally, how do you see your role? You can interpret this as you personally or you Digicel. How do you see your role in promoting women's financial inclusion through new technology?
So I'm very passionate about promoting women inclusion through technology. And the reason is that I come from a rural background myself, and I've seen the challenges that women face every day, and technology really can play a big role. I can tell you that, you know, before mobile financial services, became big in most of these countries, like you mentioned earlier, people had to travel distances to get their money. Or, the spouse was working in urban and had to send money to rural, it would be like you have to wait for a whole month. And the family back home would really operate on credit from the local stores to really tide them over. And then, you know, they would make that payment. So for me, I think it's really important that you use technology to to include women and include the overall population, right? Because it just makes life easier and one thing less to worry about, and you can become much more productive than just worry about mundane things, which when you look at the West, people don't think about it, but in low and middle income countries, it is a challenge. So from that perspective, I think technology can play a key role, and it's important for all players. Again, I will go back to everybody has to work on literacy, whether it's digital literacy or mobile money literacy. Both is really important because, like you said, the risks are that if you don't know how and when to use it, you do put yourself at risk of sharing your data, which could put you at risk, or even risk, you know, we've seen examples of where people think that it's okay to share their PIN, which you should never do it, but because they're not aware, they would share it with the agent, right? Because, and then your PIN is compromised and then your money is compromised. Or you get a call from somebody saying that, you know, you're part of the telecom network and there's a promotion being run and, you know, you're going to win X amount if you do this, and customers fall for it all the time. So that's the risk. So it's really important that you educate them, and that literacy both in digital and financial tools is a constant journey and will continue to be over the next few years. It's not that, you know, it's a one-time effort and you'll get over it. So it's a continuous journey that everybody has to work on. And then obviously the inherent capability that you build in your platform. So your platform itself should also be capable of preventing a lot of these risks. And most central banks play a great role because they have strong AML, CFT requirements of all mobile money. And this is a regulated industry, right, across the world. So the central banks really play that role. So that also helps. So technology, you know, use of technology and then educating the consumer is really key to de-risking the use of technology for good is what I would say.
You pointed out two things here. One is something we call at Women's World Banking, and you maybe have seen the tag come across the bottom here. We call it digital financial capability, which is this combination of digital literacy and financial capability, because there are so many new things to learn. I mean, I myself, as you said, we're all on a journey. I myself am constantly saying, is this legitimate? Is this fraud? What was this SMS coming through and how should I respond to it? And I'm learning new things as well in my own digital financial capability. And so making sure that products keep that in mind, I think is super important. So I'm glad you pointed that out. And then the other piece is consumer protection and making sure that on the provider side, there are measures in place to ensure that the people on the network are who they say they are, and that they're acting in an appropriate way in this new space we have. I mean, I tell my kids that our technology devices are like doorways to the outside. And when we use them, we're stepping outside. And that's really important to keep in mind for new users. So I'm really glad you pointed that out, because we often think at Women's World Banking about potential risks and challenges associated with new technology for people who are just using them for the first time.
Absolutely.
I'd like to turn now to thinking about designing with women customers in mind. You mentioned three use cases already that I found so compelling in our conversation. One was sending money home from your early days working in Pakistan on that use case and sending money from urban to rural areas especially. You also mentioned back to school. And this is like a real life need that parents have as they send their children back to school. And in fact, here in the US, we are sending our children back to school right now. My kids are in school today, as in one of their first few weeks. And that moment is a financial moment in the lives of parents. And so I think that's a really critical use case. And then you also mentioned the e-commerce piece, getting paid for e-commerce. These are three use cases that are highly specific to women, but also beneficial to men. So tell me about the process of understanding women customer needs and then designing with those needs, real life needs in mind, because nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I would love to send money today because it's my right to send money. Like, there are real life needs behind that. And it seems like you have a clear attention to those. So tell me more about that process at Digicel.
So we go through the process of design thinking within the teams, and we have a team that does the whole process, in which we get a cross segment of customers. And then when we talk about specific segments, if you're talking about female entrepreneurs and that's a real use case that we want to do, then we design it with having them in mind and then doing it quickly, prototyping it, testing it with them, and only then going into development. So we go through that process every time we design a new product or a new feature. Also, you know, it's one of the few places in the world that has more females in the workspace. You know, this I think in most of my teams, if not 50% or more are females. And even within my leadership team, it's dominated by females. There are fewer men. So I think the whole thought process is also building around that and, you know, growing a talent within the organization and then thinking about the needs. So that inherently fits into the product, because when we're designing, somebody will always come up with a challenge that they face or a use case that they think would be beneficial, and we are able to prototype it quickly and test it with the end customers and then go into the development phase. So that's really the principles that we follow. So overall design thinking, and then for specific use cases for a segment, we target that segment specifically.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's good for me to hear how quickly you do that as well. It sounds like this is not a years-long process. This is something you're iterating on.
It can't be. Nothing can be a year long. It's like literally weeks. So you have to have the platforms out very quickly. We were able to actually launch our platform. It was probably one of the fastest in the world. Was within three to four months. We started work, and in 4 months, we were live with our platform. So it's very, very agile and very fast.
And probably means seeing impacts sooner, which
yes,
there's so much urgency in this space as well. We women in rural areas without mobile phones don't have the luxury of waiting for years to be part of the economy or waiting for years to turn their smartphone into an economic opportunity. So I'm
absolutely when you talk about the impact, I wish the impact came sooner. The impact takes time because it's a journey, right? So we make the technology available, and then the harder part is the education and the literacy part, and that itself takes that is a lot of work and takes a lot of time, and it's a journey, and there's a tipping point. So it's usually slower in the beginning, and you know, then once you come to the tipping point, then it really scales very fast. So the impact takes a while to come, but when it does come, it's massive and it grows very quickly. So the network effect is then massive once it comes, but the impact is slower than I would have liked it to be, is what I would say.
Oh, I love the phrase impatient optimists or something a lot like that. And I think that describes you pretty well. Yeah. I have one more question for you. I wish we could talk for hours, and I think our audience would agree. But we do have a time limitation here. My last question is, if you had one thing that you'd like to leave our audience with, a call to action or something along those lines, based on today's conversation, what would it be? What would be your one word that you'd leave our audience with?
I would think more collaboration across all the players in the ecosystem is really, really important for the success of any initiatives, especially when you talk about financial inclusion for women. So collaboration across all stakeholders is really key.
Thank you. That's fantastic. Well, thank you, everyone. Join me in the chat in thanking Anika for her contributions to our conversation. And thank you as well to our team, Dominic Maggi, Ariane Wonder, who's behind our podcast here at Women's World Banking, the team at Digicel that Anika works with. Thank you so much to you at Digicel. I'd like to leave us with a few calls to action myself. One is building on what Anika said, that it takes so many of us. I think we often in the industry get stuck in sort of a banking box for financial services, and banks are critically important parts of the ecosystem, but they're not the only part. So I think thinking outside of and working outside of the banking box, our mental models for what financial services look like, is a great way to move forward with financial inclusion, and in fact, necessary to reaching our joint goals for women's financial inclusion. My second request for our audience here is to design with women in mind. We shared a few resources today along those lines, thinking about digital financial capability and design thinking for women. And I think those principles are so fundamental and also not very difficult to implement and to keep top of mind as we design products. And then finally, join us next time to discuss with an esteemed guest, which will be a surprise, how to strengthen women's financial resilience amid displacement crises like climate change and war. This is something we're facing more and more. There are 100 million refugees around the world, and we're looking forward to a conversation on this important topic. So thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to next time.